This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. And when the weather gets fine as it is this spring day, it reminds us that there is another season coming, an even warmer one. School lets out. North Dakota's tourism season gets into high gear. Over the past week on Main Street, we've touched bases with award-winning tourism workers across the state. Well, today, we'll hear from the person at the top. Tourism Director Sarah Ottie Coleman is John Harris's guest on this Friday's Prairie Pulse television show. Here's their conversation.
Sarah, big summer coming, after kind of maybe a rough winter. Didn't think I was ever going to get here. Talk about some of the highlights, in tourism this summer in North Dakota.
Yeah, we're all ready for summer, right? In fact, I think some of us are go ahead and skip right through spring since it came late and go straight to summer. So there's a couple fun things coming up this summer. I mean, there's hundreds of fun things, but a couple notable ones are the International Peace Gardens is celebrating their 85th anniversary. So I know a lot of people. It's our nickname, for our state, and yet a lot of people have never been there. So this would be a great opportunity to do that. They've got special festivities July 14th and 15th, but all through the summer they have concerts with the music camp and different events throughout there. In addition to the sculptures and the flowers, they have one of the largest succulent and cactus collections in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a unique place to go. Theodore Roosevelt National Park, of course, is always number one attraction in terms of numbers and visitation, but they're 40 years old this year. So that's another great option to visit. One of the biggest trends that you're seeing nationwide is the growth in paddle sports. So, and I think it's because it's affordable, right? People can get into paddle sports a lot more affordable than you can mm-hmm. buy a motorboat or something, much more expensive. And so there's a lot of opportunities statewide to even rent before you buy. And get out, and whether it's a stand-up paddleboard or a kayak or a canoe, you can do it in the Pembina Gorge area. There's rentals available there. There's rentals available at a lot of the state parks. Downtown Grand Forks, they've got the Boathouse on the Red. You can do it right there. Paddle On Adventures in Bismarck has it where you can do it on multiple bodies of water, the river, and another lake outside of Bismarck. So lots of opportunities for that. So that might be something to check out as well.
Yeah, you're right. Paddle sports really have, I guess, with the big boards. It's taken off,
yeah.
It seems like, in the last few years.
So. Yeah, it's so relaxing. It's just fun.
I've never done one of those, so maybe I need to try that this
year. Put it on your list.
What were numbers like in 2017, and kind of what do you expect for this year?
Our numbers were down a little bit last year in terms of attraction visitation. Some of that was fueled by a couple things, I think, that caused that. Obviously, the Canadian border crossing numbers continue to be down. That dollar just doesn't want to even out like we would like it to. So those Canadian border crossings were down about 10% again this year. So that hurt us. And then you just have a little bit of decreased traffic with oil and agriculture down. And so with that comes less business travel and less of that activity. So we were down a little bit in terms of attraction visitation, but yet pretty solid in a lot of other areas. Visitor centers were up a little bit. When you looked at the revenue streams, so the taxes generated, they were down a little bit. Arts, entertainment, recreation, accommodations, and foods were down just a little bit. But I'd say overall pretty flat. So mm-hmm. we feel like we've kind of turned the corner and are looking forward to a really good summer. Early indications are we're getting a lot of requests for information. Our early advertising materials are generating interest and responses. Our arrivals are up, which we measure if folks interact with our digital advertising on a phone or an iPad. We can measure when they arrive into the state, and so those numbers are up. And so we're confident that we're going to have a good summer.
How do you count a visit? I mean, do you have to be from out of state to be counted? Because when we travel to Medora or Theodore Roosevelt, am I a visitor there and counted?
Well, you would be a visitor to Medora, of course. Mm-hmm. They'd be thrilled to have you. And you would also be part of the travel and tourism industry. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the impact of the industry, we have a couple different ways to measure that. But it's in excess of $3 billion that are spent by visitors in the state. So when we measure the impact, we're able to break that down. So about 68% of our visitors and visitor dollars were spent by from other states. And then there's another 9-10% that are spent internationally. And then that leaves, the remaining 20 whatever percent is North Dakotans traveling within North Dakota.
Sure. Yeah, well, what about motel availability this year? I mean, with what's been built, there ought to be some opportunities, it seems like.
There are. You can get great deals on hotels and new hotels, new nice hotels statewide. So, yeah, for a number of years, we saw the strongest growth of hotel properties in the country. And, you know, have well over 10,000 new rooms that have been built in the last few years. You know, we're seeing it statewide from small towns to big cities, east to west. So it really is an opportunity. It's a buyer's market for people who are vacationing and looking for good deals on hotels.
Sure. What about gas prices? I mean, throughout the years, gas prices have been up and down. They seem to be high, maybe going to be high this year. How does that affect your numbers and people coming to North Dakota?
You know, it's always a concern. I think people have gotten very used to low gas prices, and so I think it's kind of a shock for some people. But in some ways, it's an advantage to us because we market so close to our borders. You know, our marketing has to be close because we just don't have a ton of money to spend. So we focus mainly on Minnesota, Wisconsin, and then we go into the Chicago markets and then into Canada, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan mainly. So for those folks, you know, it's not going to be a deal breaker. I think you're talking about a $10 difference right now from a round trip between Minneapolis and Bismarck and back with the price from last year compared to this year. So, well, and we try to communicate that. We've got a calculator on our website so people can say, yeah, it's not a deal breaker. Just skip one cup of coffee.
Well, you were talking about that earlier, and coffee's gotten to that point, I think. How about Teddy Roosevelt's Maltese Cross Cabin? Man, I don't think we've talked about that on this
show.
Yeah,
I kind of think of that as his starter home, right? Yeah. So when he first came out here, that was the cabin. It was really basically a hunter's, you know, a hunting cabin that he lived in. And so that, it has an interesting history. It has the original logs in it that it had back when, before he was president. Mm-hmm. And then when he was president, that cabin actually went to the World Fair in St. Louis. Then it went out to Portland for the centennial of the Lewis and Clark expedition. Yep. And then it was in Fargo for a while. Then it was on the Capitol grounds. And now it's finally home, back at the Badlands and right before you go into the National Park by Medora.
Yep.
So, yeah. So it's an interesting cabin. You know, after he then built the Elkhorn Ranch site after that, which was north of Medora. And then that replaced that cabin when he moved out there. Mm-hmm. And that site actually has seen really a lot of interest, a lot more traffic. I've been told that I talked to the National Park Superintendent, and she said that the interest in the Elkhorn has been strong.
Yeah. And, of course, I hear stories about a library, and we won't talk about that, though, right now.
Stay tuned on that one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, really. What about other things? You talk about Medora and Theodore Roosevelt National Park. What will people see when they go there?
Well, the beauty of the park is that you can be as active or as passive as you want to be. You know, I mean, you can just really enjoy a leisurely drive through the park and you know, go early in the morning or later and enjoy the wildlife. The horse numbers are strong. The buffalo, you're going to see a lot of wildlife throughout the park. You can hike. There's a number of hiking trails, all the way from, you know, really pretty easy trails to the more treacherous trails. Of course, if you want to do mountain biking, you know, you can't do that in the park, but the Matahe Trail just kind of goes adjacent to it, and so that's a great opportunity for mountain biking as well up there. You know, but then the beauty is that you've got all the amenities that Medora offers, too, right at the footsteps, or Watford City if you're in the north unit. So in the south unit, you've got you know, all the activities and attractions in Medora, the Cowboy Hall of Fame, and of course the musical and the nightly pitchfork fondue and the amenities, and then Bully Pulpit. And then Watford City has such great experiences there as well. You know, great biking, hiking in the north unit, as well as all the new amenities that they have in Watford City. Great hotels, great restaurants, you know, great little visitor center with a museum in there.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Bully Pulpit being a golf course, for people who might not know that, they should.
Oh, yes, yes.
Let's talk about some of the upcoming events. Fargo Marathon. How has the Fargo Marathon done for you, and how huge has that become?
Oh, it's been a tremendous addition to the state and to the Fargo-Moorhead area. I mean, when you look at the numbers, I think they're at about 285,000 people have run that since it began. Mm-hmm. And I think they're from 21 countries. So it's a great it's a great reason to bring people to North Dakota. And what you'll hear if you're around you know, during that weekend, people are surprised. You know, they had no idea what to expect, and they're surprised, and they love the people, and they love the feel of the town. And I think it really probably generates a lot of return trips. It's gotten some great publicity. Obviously, it helps that it's flat and it's early because it's such a great qualifying race and one of the top for that. So that really helps garner more runners from across the country and world.
Yeah, well, Fargo has done an excellent job building that up. How about the Mandan Rodeo Days?
So that is one of the longest running rodeos in the country. It's been well over 100 years, over 125, in fact. They celebrated that a few years ago. So it's just a kind of a tradition. I mean, it not only is it a great rodeo, world-class rodeo, they bring in the best clowns and the best announcers and the best bands to go along with it and to add to that atmosphere, but it's also part of a bigger festival. They've got art in the park going on. They've got parades. They've got street dances. They have, you know, it's kind of a big, small-town feel. If you haven't been to Mandan Rodeo Days, it would definitely be worth a trip over the 4th of July.
And then what about Skyfest over Fort Stevenson?
Kites, what is right? That? Well, kites. Mm. We have wind in North Dakota, in case you didn't know.
We do.
Yeah, so there's a few different kite festivals, but that one, the one at Fort Stevenson, is always Memorial Day weekend, and just a great way. You know, sometimes Memorial Day isn't quite nice enough to get the boat out and to do some of the water sports that you want to do, so it's a great way to get those campers or even day visitors up there and bring the kites out and see a lot of color in the sky.
Well, and as I said, you better have a pretty sturdy kite a lot of days in North Dakota. What about the Devil's Run in June?
That's a car show in Devil's Lake. Okay. So one of the biggest car shows, and again, longest running car shows. It attracts people from all over the region. You know, they have, a full run of festivities that go along with that, from parades to shows to bands and events. So it's a great event, too.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the Badlands Dinosaur Museum?
That has transitioned a little bit in the last few years. The city actually manages that facility now as part of their whole museum park up there. So it's one of a few museums that are located right off of the interstate as you're coming into Dickinson. And they've done some great great refurbishing. The staff up there is world-renowned. And they do dinosaur digs out of there, and they have 11 full-size replicas. So it's a great, great stop, great visit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all kids love dinosaurs. So.
Mm-hmm.
North Dakota Tourism Director Sarah Audie Coleman in a conversation with Prairie Public's President and CEO John Harris. We'll have more of their discussion in a moment.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
The Pulse is a Saturday afternoon radio show about health. Sounds like a pretty dry topic, right?
It can be devastatingly boring.
That's the host of The Pulse, Mike and Scott.
So we are just trying to give people answers to some basic questions and to cut through some of this dense language that always seems to surround healthcare.
So, Mike, it seems like The Pulse is cultivating a young audience, what with your down-to-earth hosting style and snappy production. But I'm wondering how you get young folks to actually care about health.
I just had a funny discussion with a lot of my coworkers who are millennials, and they said, stop looking at us all the time. Stop trying to analyze us and figure out what we do. So I think a good story is a good story.
Okay, Mike, and so how do you make a program about healthcare accessible?
Many of the issues we report on can be really hard to understand. I think it always comes back to people, finding the people who either are living through a moment or are really passionate about a topic.
So what was your most intense moment on the show?
We recently met a young couple where the husband has brain cancer. They had this moment where the woman suddenly said to her husband, I can't see us getting old together. And then she started crying. It feels very special that they trust us with that kind of moment.
Catch the informative and highly entertaining new program on Prairie Public, The Pulse, Saturday afternoons at 2 Central, 1 Mountain.
Green is the color of spring and summer in North Dakota. It's also when much of the state's tourism business takes place, and that means advertising and marketing to get North Dakota's attractions on travel schedules. Here's more of John Harris's conversation with State Tourism Director Sarah Audie Coleman.
Well, you mentioned your marketing campaigns, and I understand Josh has renewed his contract.
Yes, we're continuing to work with Josh Dumel, so we're excited about that. Obviously, he was such a natural ambassador for North Dakota. Loves the state and loves to talk about it, and so it's an extension to that. We started working with them a few years ago. And so, yeah, so we shot a few more. There are a few more executions that you'll see out there. We were in Grand Forks and Minot last summer, and then he'll be back this summer to do a couple other sites. And so we've extended the use of all the other pieces that we were able to shoot 2 years previous through 2019. So,
yeah. Can you even put a number on it? How important is it to have somebody that recognizable by so many different people to be part of your marketing campaign?
It's really hard to put a number on that. It opens eyes that we would have not gotten, before. You look at the network that they have and he has on social media and the following that he has, different people from different parts of the country. It really is hard to measure. And the other piece of that is that, a lot of tourism marketing is about inspiring and inspirational. And if you can tell a story and have somebody tell your story, you're going to stand out a little bit from some of the other tourism advertisements.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, let's talk about the oil production. Has the decline in oil production had an impact on tourism? Because I guess that could be good or bad for tourism, because people might have shied away with everything that was going on.
Yeah, I think we're past that because of all the infrastructure that has been built up. But yet, sometimes we'll be out and people will still think that the traffic's bad and the hotels are all full. So, there's always that communication challenge out there. But I think where it hurts a little bit is, again, that business travel is down a little bit. You don't have the commuters. But I don't think it'll ever be to the point that it was before because the housing has caught up. So really that is an opportunity to fill those rooms with, those weekly business travelers and then the leisure travelers. It's just an education piece and letting people know that we have things available and rooms are available and that the traffic isn't bad and we built these pull-offs and all the infrastructure has been improved so that when it does rebound, visitors are still going to have a great experience.
Sure. Well, how important is the state fair and, well, for that matter, all the county fairs?
They're kind of a tradition of summer, right? I mean, there are a lot of people that maybe don't go every year, but there are the people that do. And so I think it's one of those kind of summer things that people look forward to. The state fair is a huge event. In terms of numbers, they draw very well, with concerts every night and entertainment every evening. Have historically drawn really well from Canada and outside of North Dakota, in addition to, of course, the great local entertainment that it has for all the people who show cattle and do all those other events at the fair. So, yeah, that was one of the sites that we shot. We did some photos of with Josh Dumel last summer. It was during the fair.
Oh, good. And what about any new things or maybe publicity things you're trying out this year? Anything different?
Yeah, we always try to tweak our media plan. We really measure what worked, what worked the best, what executions, what order. And so every year there are tweaks in how we market the state. But one of the cool additions that we did this year is we added in Minneapolis a little earlier because of the Super Bowl. We wrapped the train. And so for 8 weeks, you saw a North Dakota legendary train, that was through the Super Bowl. And actually, that blue line was the only that day of the Super Bowl, it was only transporting people to and from. But, of course, a lot of people that don't even have Super Bowl tickets come, the week or 10 days prior for the festival and festivities around that. So that was a fun addition. We saw a lot of posts on social media with people, that were taking pictures by the train, and hopefully that opened a lot of people's eyes and got them thinking more about North Dakota. The other thing that we're doing, and we're kicking it off, is the North Dakota Travel Matters series. So we're just kind of doing short little videos, really telling the story of the people who make up the travel and tourism industry. So, traditionally when you think about the industry, you might think of an outfitter or somebody who works at the Medora Musical or somebody who works in a hotel. But we're showcasing all the other folks that work to serve as visitors in our state. And so not only does it open people's eyes to the impact and the breadth of the industry, but it also gives those insider tips. Like if somebody's coming, you know, it's fun for them to see something from the brewery or the coffee shop or the actual interpreter at that historic site.
Mm-hmm.
So those are being released this summer.
So what about some of the various forts throughout the state?
You know, military history obviously is a big part of North Dakota, and we have them kind of scattered throughout the state. Some of the big ones have you know, really rich interpretive programs and experiences. Of course, Fort Abraham Lincoln is the one that initially comes to mind because they have the cavalry history as well as the infantry history all right there. The Custer House is there. And that, you know, they tell just a great story with the interpretation and the buildings out there. You know, Fort Abercrombie out east is another great experience. Fort Union up by Williston is another example. You know, that was the largest, you know, basically that was the shopping center of its day. During the fur trading era, it was the biggest hub between Seattle and Minneapolis, or St. Louis, rather. Mm-hmm. So they have a great, great rich history and story. And the fun thing about them is that they're interactive. You know, you can go and really have fun and learn.
What about the Mandan Hidatsa Village?
So the Onislaught Village at Fort Lincoln is, and that's the other thing, that area is just so interesting because you've got two kinds of military history and then you've got the Indian Lodge there as well. And, you know, that dates back, you know, 400 years. And there's five lodges that are restored that you can kind of walk through and kind of get a peek of what it was like to live in one of the Indian villages. But then there's other sites scattered throughout. You can go north to Double Ditch and see where that village was. You can then go north to Knife River Indian Village National Historic Site north of by Stanton. And that also has an interpretive center and really talks about what life was like during that time.
Mm-hmm. Are there any fun things maybe going on the state capitol grounds this summer?
They do. They have a couple great events they've got events throughout the year, but the two that come to mind initially is they do a fabulous 4th of July. They do the symphony on the Capitol grounds with the fireworks display that's really second to none. They do a really nice job with that. And then they do an art fair. It's called Capitol Affair, and that is usually the first weekend in August. And there it's just arts and crafts vendors and entertainers and whatnot that kind of line the whole mall and then some of those parking lots in there. So it's kind of a unique setting for that.
You know, when you go to conventions or whatever, what do people think of North Dakota?
In a lot of cases, they don't know anything. But if we're working, you know, internationally, they're really interested in the Western heritage, you know, very interested in the whole cowboy and Indian era. When we go into sports shows, you know, they have a interest in outdoors and they're looking for hunting and fishing and, you know, information on kayaking and some of those things. But yeah, overall, I would say people are surprised at the variety and they're also surprised at the size of the state and how it varies so much from east to west.
Well, Sarah, if people want more information, where can they go?
They should go to ndtourism.com, and we've got a search function right on there so they can search by what experience or what part of the state or what they might be interested in.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Always good to be here.
Prairie Pulse host John Harris talking with State Tourism Director Sarah Audie Coleman. You can see the entire Prairie Pulse show this Friday at 7:30 Central on our television service. Coming up on Main Street, a shortage of lawyers in rural areas. And Sue Balcom talks about seasonal eating and meditation tips with Randy Kay. First, the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Governor Burgum held one of his Main Street Initiative meetings in Mandan today.
Well, I think Mandan's actually a poster child for it.
Mandan Mayor Tim Hebling.
We've used a lot of the Renaissance Zone projects, storefront improvement projects, a lot of the things that a lot of people would like to eliminate. I think if we wouldn't have had those opportunities, we wouldn't be in the growth pattern that we're in today.
Hebling says those efforts are helping to make Mandan an attractive city, and he says that's reflected in the city's population growth.
I know I look back 15 years ago, and my attitude and my outlook for Mandan, it was actually pretty bleak. There was a lot of empty storefronts. There was a lot of dirt, debris, trash. you looked around and people's attitude more than anything wasn't positive. And I think today you're seeing a positive energy. You're seeing people want to move into Mandan rather than to move out of Mandan.
Mandan Business Development Director Ellen Huber says you can see that in the number of new businesses and new restaurants that have opened in the city.
We didn't want to be a bedroom community to Bismarck. Mandan aspires to be much more than that, and so we recognize that we need more amenities like restaurants. They're important to residents, they're important for attracting visitors, and for businesses. And so that's something we've been working on. We're really, you know, working to improve the quality of life amenities in our community so that we can attract workforce.
The C-SPAN 50 Capitals Tour rolled up to the state capitol in Bismarck today.
C-SPAN is going to all 50 states with the C-SPAN bus, and we're engaging with communities, but also interviewing elected officials about what issues are going on in their states.
Joel Bacon is a C-SPAN representative.
We hear from callers all the time on our Washington Journal from all over the country, so now we're visiting where they actually live and seeing what their elected officials have to say.
C-SPAN interviewed Governor Doug Burgum while the bus was on the Capitol grounds. Bacon says the bus will also be stopping at a number of schools throughout North Dakota.
And talking to students about all of the resources that C-SPAN has to offer, with almost 240,000 hours of searchable free video online, and then also talking about our student cam competition, which is a 5 to 7 minute video documentary competition that we do every year for students in middle and high school.
Bacon says a school could win $5,000 in that documentary competition. And the executive director of Fargo's Hector International Airport says this week's return of service by Frontier Airlines is good news. Sean Doberstein says Frontier has announced its plan to provide 3 flights a week between Fargo and Denver. He says it's especially poignant when you consider the current status of the airline industry.
That pilot shortage is really difficult and is having a lot of impact on markets around the country in terms of not only keeping service that you have in place today, but, you know, let alone trying to add new service or additional service to your existing markets.
Doberstein says at this point, the return of Frontier gives Hector International Airport service from 5 different carriers. He says he would still like to see the service developed with Alaskan Airlines between Fargo and Seattle. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Despite a well-known shortage of lawyers in rural communities, there is an affordable middle ground between driving a long way and having no legal representation. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports how unbundled legal services could be particularly useful in rural places.
In her high-ceilinged office in an old bank building, attorney Amy Skorgerson unties a piece of blue yarn to loosen a bundle of popsicle sticks. She reads the words stamped on some of them.
Negotiation, court representation, researching law, drafting documents.
Each stick represents a service Skorgerson and her business partner, Andrea McGinn, offer at The Law Shop in Van Meter, Iowa. Clients choose and pay for only what they need.
We noticed that there was a trend happening nationally toward people utilizing services that were what you might call non-traditional.
A la carte, flat fee, or unbundled, whatever the name, the idea is that the client doesn't have to hire a lawyer for a whole package. There's skepticism about it. Some lawyers fear clients won't get everything they deserve. But Skorgerson says there's a huge need. 60 to 80% of people in the U.S. don't hire an attorney for things like divorces. McGinn says people want to save money or can't take the time to travel to a law office or believe they can do it themselves.
By giving those people the option of having an attorney for just part of their case, it's going to make, such better outcomes for their families and their kids moving forward.
Courts are often overwhelmed by all of these do-it-yourselfers. And McGinn says for many people, a couple $100 will get them over the finish line. When Jennifer Genovese was getting divorced, she didn't want an expensive, drawn-out legal battle.
My husband and I at the time were getting along, so we wanted a fairly smooth, quick divorce.
Several lawyers quoted about $5,000, including mediation, court appearances, and other things she didn't need.
I even printed the paperwork online to do it ourselves, and it was just, it was way too confusing.
A local banker recommended she call Skorgerson. Genovese and her now ex met with her a couple of times.
She's the one that filled out that paperwork for us, which made our life so much easier. And she did all the legwork.
And that was it. The cost was a quarter to a third of those early estimates, Genovese says, and her divorce was final in 5 weeks. Genevieve didn't have to travel far, but many people in the Midwest and Plains states live hours away from a lawyer. Longtime attorneys still practicing in small towns may be looking to retire, potentially making the situation worse, says Jennifer Zwagerman at Drake University Law School in Des Moines.
As we're seeing fewer and fewer attorneys locate in rural communities, that access to justice issue is becoming more evident.
Zwagerman's job includes career development, and she's launching a program to help connect rural communities with students and recent graduates. She says offering unbundled services might help someone get a practice started, but it poses particular challenges for inexperienced lawyers.
One of the hardest things for a young or newer attorney starting out with that type of flat fee or unbundled is figuring out exactly how long it takes to do certain things.
Other hurdles await any lawyer willing to go to a rural area, from housing to childcare to jobs for spouses. And some skeptics question whether a la carte services are a profitable way to run a law practice.
So this is how we're growing. And this is my office.
In this semi-rural county in central Iowa, Skorgerson and McGinn's approach of meeting rural clients where they're at is working.
We became lawyers to help people. And if this allows us to help more people, then that's what we're going to do it.
Attorney office, and then office manager, another attorney office, and a conference room.
Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration that focuses on America's rural and farm issues. Coming up on Main Street, Sue Balcom talks about seasonal eating.
I'm Danielle Webster. North Dakota is kind of like one really big small town that's connected by really long streets. And we all really kind of know each other. I'm from Devil's Lake. I have family and friends that live all across the state in various different communities, small towns, metro areas. And everyone in North Dakota has connections like that. I mean, we always talk about 6 degrees of separation. I feel like it's a lot smaller in North Dakota. If something happens in Williston, that's our friends. Those are our neighbors over there that it's happening to. When it's flooding in Fargo, people in Devil's Lake understand what that's like. People in Minot know what that's like. There's a lot of really interesting things happening here all the time. There's a lot of water issues, energy issues, a lot of exciting things happening. There was a lot of growth and a lot of booming going on here. But there's also been a lot of struggle. You know, the oil industry obviously has been struggling now for the last year or two. Agriculture's been really kind of struggling. It's kind of like a roller coaster. I mean, people think North Dakota isn't that interesting or that not a lot of stuff happens here, but that is not really the case. We're all friends and neighbors and connected somehow, and working together to kind of get those stories out is a good thing. Listen for regional news on Prairie Public, telling North Dakota's story.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg, and we're joined in our Bismarck studio by Sue Balcom. She's with the Tri-County Alliance and talks about Germans from Russia culture. And also she has a business, a farmer's market called The Root Cellar, small farm north of Mandan. We're going to talk about lots of stuff around food with Sue.
Sue, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. There's nothing I love to talk about more than food.
Well, and this time of year especially, we want to start talking about seasonal eating. You just start craving all the stuff that's shooting out of the ground, especially after this spring.
Yes, it has been a cold spring. And, you know, it's typically the time of year when you get that urge to clean things out. And that would include your wardrobe. So therefore, in the back of your mind, your body is going, you know, if you're going to expose so much of your skin, you're going to have to start eating better. And that would start with lots of fruits and vegetables because it is gardening season.
So what's local?
Well, we currently, since we're so behind this year, we currently are doing things like microgreens. There are probably some lettuces available, probably some things like basil, maybe some dill that you can get a hold of. Asparagus is popping out of the ground now, so you'll need to be starting to peek around the corners and see what your farmers are doing.
What are the advantages of eating seasonally when we are in such a hyper-connected world and I can get avocados in February?
Well, you know, a long time ago, it used to be there were no big supermarkets and there were no great big trucks on your highways. Heck, I don't even think there was a highway back in the day, like in my grandmother's day. And so people had to eat what was kind of grown locally. Now, local has become a very popular word lately. And of course, it means that something is growing within about 100 miles of where you live. And this affords opportunities for you to get fresher and more nutritious fruits and vegetables. It also is an economic development tool for these young farmers that are coming back to North Dakota with their families.
How are they more nutritious?
Okay, so let's take, for instance, that avocado you mentioned. I love avocados. We don't grow avocados up here. So first of all, you have to find the climate for avocados, like Mexico or California. Then you have to grow that tree, and you have to have somebody pick it. Then they put it into boxes. They load it on a truck. And, you know, I just came back from California, and that is a faraway place from North Dakota. So it's so it's picked. It's stored for a day or two. It's put on a truck. It's trucked up here. It might take a week to get to your grocery store. It's going to be on your grocery store shelf for one or two days till you discover it. And then you've got it at home in your refrigerator for a day or two. All that time, the produce begins to sort of degrade, and its nutritional benefits kind of seep away. We also have beautiful black soil here in North Dakota, and that is filled with nutrients. So vegetables also derive good nutrients from your soil. And beans that we were planted here in this soil, we should be eating vegetables and honey and all of these local things, because they're sort of like adapted to our bodies, or our bodies are adapted to them.
Well, our rich black soil is locked in ice for several months, and it's still a little early to be pulling any lettuce or rhubarb or dill out of it. So, well, how about farmers like you with this root cellar? How do you get a jump on Mother Nature, if you will?
I actually got nearly 200 tomato plants growing in my greenhouse, which is part of my house, and I go out there every morning and I sing to those little plantlets. We have basil growing, we have onions growing. We're going to plant potatoes and onions and shallots probably this weekend. As you know, I do live on the west side of the Missouri River, and we kind of have a microclimate there that keeps us a little bit more temperate than the Red River Valley, where I'm very envious of the dirt over there, but I don't care that you have more days of cold and snow and gray than we do. So we're already actively working. I know that you can, and we'll talk more about microgreens later, but I know that you can get those locally here in Bismarck, and I know that you guys have a food co-op in Fargo also. And there's one in Grand Forks that people can start seeing things from local farmers.
What is it that you're singing to your tomatoes?
Yeah, do they like country or rock?
Well, if you were my spouse and you had to live with me and your biggest pet peeve was the words to the song don't match the original words to the song, that's what I sing to my plants. I tell them what a beautiful morning it is. I used to do that to my children, too. I would sing Red, Red Robin to them in the morning. They just hated me for that.
Well, one thing about having seasonal fruits and vegetables is that we can have an abundance of them and then face the, you know, the difficult question of what do I do with all of this, because I don't want to eat the same thing day after day after day.
Well, and that's kind of where I would say food preservation skills would come in handy. Like, people are always thinking, oh, I can't eat local food in the winter months, but that's not true at all. We have a root cellar, hence the name of our business. Mm-hmm. And we have canned goods in there all year long. We actually, it's become quite an attraction. People will come out to the house and ask to see the root cellar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if you really want to go down there. You know, those little old German ladies used to draw straws to see who had to go down there because of the salamanders that kind of live down there. But when I was in California, a young lady said to me, I don't know what a root cellar is. So I kind of explained that to her. And then we were talking about North Dakota weather. And I said, I love blizzards because I get to stay at home for 3 days at a time. And she said, you mean you have food in your house for 3 days? Hello.
Yeah, well, we have a cellar, too. That's something that would be unique in earthquake country.
Oh, I bet it would. And so there's a lot of these things that our grandparents, even my mother, did to eat locally, and that included preservation and you know, freezing things, canning things, so that they would have food because they just couldn't run out somewhere and buy it. But there's also on our little farm, we have a season extension tool, and it's called a high tunnel. And so that warms the earth up sooner. It protects plants from the wind. And so there was one April that was pretty temperate 2 years ago. I had so much lettuce growing in that. It just came up on its own after the winter was done, and we ate lettuce and more lettuce because I've been craving vegetables lately, and you need to eat lighter when the weather is warmer. And also, you'll notice there's a lot of light out there now, even if it's not really, really warm yet.
Sue Balcom is a member of the Tri-County Alliance. That's the Sauerkraut Triangle in south-central North Dakota. But she farms at the Root Cellar, which is north of Mandan, just west of the Missouri River. Thanks for being with us, Sue.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with my friends on the other side of the state.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the North Dakota Farmers Market and Growers Association, helping North Dakota farmers, ranchers, and gardeners market their products through farmers markets, grocery stores, and restaurants statewide. Learn more at ndfarmersmarkets.org. It was 100 years ago that the U.S. entered World War I, and it was a bit of a shock. In our region, with a heavily immigrant German population, there were tensions, and the food-producing system was under a lot of pressure, with workers going off to be soldiers. There are so many stories of what happened to those soldiers and all the responses and adjustments here at home. Hear about it on Dakota Datebook. At least once a week, we'll feature a World War I story, and you can see them on our website. Look for Prairie Public, The Great War.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. There are a lot of misconceptions when it comes to mental health, including ideas about taking care of yourself. We think stress management means getting rid of all stress rather than learning how to cope with it more effectively. In this excerpt from the Simple Self-Care podcast, host Randy Kay guides us through the practice of meditation.
It seems so simple, yet it's complicated. It's easy, yet difficult. And where to start? What to do? Who to study with? Are you even doing it right? See, the topic of meditation seems to be coming up a lot these days. More and more studies are proving the benefits of meditation, and people's personal experiences are gaining traction. While this is wonderful, I've also heard that it's left more and more people feeling confused and frustrated on how to adopt these practices. Well, have no fear, my dear one. I am here to clear the brain fog with some simple techniques and starting points. I'm also here to state that meditation is not just sitting and trying not to think. While there are formal styles and disciplines that are worth dedicating yourself to, I believe that meditation can be done anytime, anywhere. My meditation practice is very, very simple. Simple, yet oh so effective. Allow me to share with you my two go-to techniques that keep me calm and mindful. Number one, breathe. And number two, notice. These are my two key words I come back to when I feel anxious, doing a task that I don't like, or craving some meditation time. When you are wondering how to meditate, or if your mind wanders in meditation, or you're having a rough moment in life, just think, breathe, and notice. Here's what I mean. Let's start with breath work. I would dare to say that learning a few breathing exercises is all you ever need to do to learn how to meditate. Meditation is creating stillness and tuning inward. And what better way to do that than to take deep, therapeutic breaths? Hopefully, you're breathing anyway, so why not make it a therapeutic breath? It might sound too simple to make a difference, but honestly, it will change your life. Allow me to show you, and follow along if you can, or come back to this episode when you can follow along. Start by placing one hand on your chest and one hand on your belly, and take some deep breaths. What hand is moving more? Ideally, the hand on your belly is expanding, pressing that hand out. That is where the breath needs to be. Your belly muscles are meant to be your primary breathing muscles, but a lot of people find belly breathing quite challenging. We've over time trained ourselves to breathe in the upper chest, like these shallow panic breaths, but we were actually built to breathe with these bigger lower belly muscles. So perhaps this belly breath is all you do in your meditation practice for now. You lie down or sit in a comfortable place, conditioning your body to breathe comfortably from that space. And if your mind starts to wander, which it will, that's okay. It's just part of the practice. You gently bring it back to your breath, to the sensations you feel, to creating space and calmness. Once that breath feels comfortable, you can make it a little bit more focused with various exercises. And one of my go-to ones is the three-part breath. After you've done some basic deep breathing, you're going to inhale in three different segments. First, the belly expands with air, filling up like a balloon. And when that is full, then you focus on filling up the lungs, expanding the rib cage out. And then when that is full, you keep inhaling and you fill up the chest. And then you exhale all of that air out. And you practice this a few times. Each time you inhale, controlling that breath on the inhale, you're expanding and breathing into new areas of the torso. And then you gently exhale all that air out. And after you've done that a few times, you can return back to your normal breath. I practice this exercise all the time and in all kinds of scenarios, like in the car, doing dishes, falling asleep at night. You can do it in a boat. You can do it in a moat. You get the idea. Bringing our awareness to our breath can turn any task into a meditation, into a way of creating stillness and tuning in during any situation life throws at us. I've gotten a lot of feedback from my clients and students about learning how to breathe therapeutically, and it has been the most influential thing that they've learned from me. Just breathing. It's great. The next thing is to notice. Notice the little things. Along with intentional breathing, you can switch your focus to the subtler things. How does this breathing exercise make you feel? Where do you feel tension? Can you release this tension with your breath? How are you really doing? You can also take that into your everyday tasks. Eating, for example. Slow down and eat free of distraction. Notice the texture of the food, the flavors, where your food came from. How does it make you feel? Is it serving your body or not? Other examples would be noticing your surroundings while you exercise. How does it make you feel? Where are you holding tension? I've also heard of people consciously engaging their five senses to calm down the mind and tune into what their body is feeling. Again, meditation is creating stillness and tuning inward. Slowing down and noticing those subtle things does just that. Breathe and notice, folks. Start there. When you bring in these two things intentionally, you can turn anything into a meditation. Yes, the depths of meditation are vast and it's a lifelong study, but it's okay to keep it simple for now. Don't overcomplicate. Be curious and see all that there is to gain by breathing and noticing.
Randy Kay is a self-care coach, yoga instructor, and massage therapist. You can find out more and subscribe to her podcast at naturallyrandyk.com. That's Randy with an I. Decoded Date Book is next.
Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I don't care about cars at all. To me, a car is just a thing you sit in while a cop talks to you about not operating it very well. But this station likes cars, especially your car, the one you're sick of. And the best thing is, they know how to turn that car into the programs you love. I can't even turn my car into a parking lot if my GPS is broken. Turn your car into the programs you love.
Just call 844-440-6900 or visit us online at prairiepublic.org/car.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 16th. Leland Molland was born in Nome, North Dakota on May 7th, 1919. After high school, Leland went to the State Agricultural College in Fargo. When the U.S. entered World War II, he enlisted, choosing the Army Air Corps. The first U.S. Army fighter group to serve in England was the 31st Fighter Group. They had planned to use the Bell P-39 Aracoba, but this plane was discovered to be wholly inadequate against the superior German fighters. As a stopgap measure, the American fighter group was outfitted with British Spitfires. This would be the only time that an American aviation unit used foreign-made aircraft. The Spitfires were dressed in American markings, star and bars, and first saw action on August 19, 1942, with the 8th Air Force when they supported the Allied raid at Dieppe, France. Leland Molland was assigned to the 31st Fighter Group, which had moved to North Africa as part of the 12th Air Force in November of 1942. Leland was in the 308th Squadron and in early 1944 got his own Spitfire. He had the name Fargo Express emblazoned on the side of his Spit, along with a picture of horses and a stagecoach. Molland first bloodied the enemy while flying cover over the Anzio, Italy beachhead in January of 1944, where he shot down two German Focke-Wulf fighter bombers. On February 6, 1944, the 308th Squadron commander, Major Virgil Fields, was shot down and killed. Lieutenant Molland, who became an ace with his fifth kill in the same engagement, was moved up to command the squadron. In April of 1944, the 31st Fighter Group became part of the 15th Air Force and started flying the North American P-51 Mustang. Molland went on to down six more German aircraft while flying the Mustang, ending the war on North Dakota's short list of double aces. Leland Molland stayed in the Air Force during the Korean War and flew the T-33 Shooting Star fighter against the North Korean forces. On this date in 1951, Molland, now a lieutenant colonel, was returning from a weather reconnaissance mission. On the aircraft's approach to Tagger Airfield in near zero visibility, he crashed into a mountain and was killed. On December 20, 1951, Leland Molland was interned at Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Scott Nelson. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
Alexa, play Prairie Public.
Welcome to Prairie Public. Would you like to listen to a radio stream or listen to a podcast?
Radio stream.
If you've got a smart speaker, you can listen to Prairie Public.
Which of the two streams would you like to listen to? Roots, rock, and jazz, or classical and news?
You can also ask Alexa to play Prairie Public Podcasts.
Would you like to listen to Main Street, Natural North Dakota, Chef Rosie, Dakota Datebook, Plain Folk, or Why?
All you have to do is ask.
Alexa, play Prairie Public.
A record number of people died of opioid overdose in Wisconsin last year. As she runs for re-election, Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin has her own story to share about that crisis.
I remember what it was like to come home from school and not be able to get into the house. I'd pound on the door, but my mother wouldn't answer. She'd be passed out inside. My mother had a drug abuse problem.
That's on the next Morning Edition.
That's tomorrow morning, right here on Prairie Public.
Thursday on Main Street, Memorial Day is more dangerous than others on the highway, and North Dakota ranks high when it comes to fatal drunken driving accidents. On Thursday, we'll talk with research analyst Joe Resendez about DUIs. We'll invite you to a series of Prairie Public and Barnes & Noble children's book fairs coming to Fargo, Bismarck, and Minot, and we'll share our What's Happening calendar of events. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Thursday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.